Another legal concept that comes up is it sometimes happens that a person may do some wrongful act, some harmful act that may qualify as malpractice. They do it while in the employ of someone else and under the aegis of someone else's responsibility. We call this vicarious liability. And there is a type of case called a respondeat superior case. Respondeat means let them answer, and the superior means the boss or the superior person. So it's let the boss answer, let the superior person answer. And what they're answering for is for the acts of the inferior persons. And the inferior persons is meant here to be an employee or someone carrying out your duties for you under your guidance and supervision. So the way this plays into malpractice actions sometimes is that a doctor who gives directions to an assistant to carry out certain procedures is responsible for the acts of that assistant in the assistant's carrying out of those duties. Chiropractors do this all the time, and in physical therapy things, they say to their CA, I want you to shake and bake this patient for 15 minutes. And if the CA puts on the shake and bake machine and goes to sleep or leaves the room, and the patient gets shaked and baked too much, you know, they get cooked and injured somehow, then the doctor is actually responsible. So when a malpractice suit is filed, it's filed against the doctor. The assistant's name may also be mentioned, but the ultimate responsibility falls on the doctor for the acts of your employee. This is not only true in doctor's cases and in malpractice cases, this isn't true in many employment situations. You've all probably heard of a truck driver who gets in an accident. The truck driver doesn't own the truck. The truck driver is merely an employee working for a large trucking concern. And when the lawsuits all settle, it's the trucking firm that is responsible for the actions of the truck driver. They're responsible for the actions of their employee. So this is sometimes called the kingpin rule. That, you know, in a drug case, you're always looking for the person higher up. And so you don't want just the people selling drugs on the street. You don't want to just arrest them. You want to arrest the supplier, the person importing the drugs into the country. Even though they may not be selling it, you want to arrest them and get to them. That would cut off the source. And so if one person is arrested, if you can point to the fact and can prove that a person higher up is supervising them and directing them, then you may file charges, you may get the goods on the higher up person, even though the higher up person didn't do the actual act. You've all heard of mob cases and mafia cases where someone orders a lower person to kill someone. The person who kills someone is guilty of murder, so is the person ordering, even though the person ordering may have been in Bahamas on vacation at the time of the murder. If you order it, then you're responsible for it. Works that way in practice too. If you order an action, if you order someone to work in your office and do a certain procedure, then you are responsible if that procedure in fact goes wrong. You have problems. So this gets carried out to some extreme sometimes. Everybody can understand that if you hire a CA and that CA is working for you, and if something goes wrong, you are ultimately responsible. Most people don't have any problem with that. What if you hire another doctor who works in your office? Or what about if you don't even hire them to work for you? It's not an employee-employer situation, but what if it's an associateship? Another doctor is just sharing your office. You know, sometimes malpractice actions can go a little bit sour, and a doctor may be accused of malpractice for the actions of an associate doctor. This happens occasionally. If you are, in fact, if you have a legal entity called a partnership, You are responsible for the acts of your partner. The partnership is a separate entity, like a corporation, but it is a partnership, and the partners in that entity are responsible for the acts of all the other partners. One of the reasons chiropractors don't practice as partnerships very often is that liability situation. You don't want to be held responsible for the acts of someone else working in your office. That's not a good feeling. So very often chiropractors go to some lengths to make it obvious that they are not a partnership. There have been cases where a court has ruled that two doctors in the same building were in fact a partnership when they had no documentation of being a partnership. They never called themselves a partnership. They never signed a partnership agreement, but they acted like partners. And so the court, looking at their actions, says, if you act like a partner, you are a partner. Your partnership is liable for the actions of its partners. So one partner could be held liable. One partner's assets could be seized for the actions of another partner's actions, actions of a malpractice nature. So it's very important as a chiropractor that if you're going to be practicing with someone else in the same facility, the same building, that you establish exactly how you practice and write it up in a documentary form. If you're going to have a partnership, then draw up partnership papers. Don't recommend it, but if you are, it's best to specify it. If you are not going to have a partnership, it's best that you specify what kind of arrangement you have so that you may not be construed as a partnership if in fact you are not. This happens with chiropractors who share expenses. You may have two chiropractors sharing a building, sharing an x-ray machine, even sharing an employee, but they really want to establish that they don't have a partnership. It would be very important that you draw up a document that specifies your arrangement, how you're going to make arrangements to share a building, share an x-ray machine, and perhaps an employee, who's going to pay what and how it's going to be decided who pays how much. And if you're sharing expenses, you would want to write up a document called an expense sharing agreement that states we are sharing expenses of the rent, the utilities, the x-ray machine, and the Yellow Page ad. That's what we're going to be sharing. All other expenses would be on an individual basis. And at the bottom of the document, you'd probably want to say, nothing in this agreement is to be construed as a partnership agreement. So that you state in your document that you are not a partnership. That takes away your liability for the acts of the other party. There are some cases where a judge has overturned a statement like that, saying, even though you said you weren't a partnership, you're acting like a partnership. And if you act like a partnership, then you are a partnership. And if you are a partnership, you're liable for the acts of each other, and we can take the money of Dr. A, even though he was in Bahamas on vacation when Dr. B did some malpractice action. It can happen. So it's important that you specify and delineate and be very clear about what kind of arrangement you have when you are, in fact, practicing with another doctor. If you are, in fact, an employee of another doctor, or you as the senior doctor hire another chiropractor to work for you, there's no way to avoid the responsibility of one party for another. It's built in. The respondeat superior arrangement is built in and you can't help it. So how do you protect yourself in situations like that? The answer is you have lots of malpractice insurance. You make sure that Dr. A and Dr. B, you know, the employee doctor and the employer doctor, both are well covered by insurance. To a sufficient level that it's just not likely to affect your own personal assets. If you have a very small liability policy, you got a $100,000 malpractice policy, your employee has a $100,000 policy, and a judgment and an action is given against you for $500,000, you're both in trouble. Your insurance is not enough to cover the award. And so they're going to go after your personal assets, and your house and your car, your swimming pool and your boat are at jeopardy here. So it's important that you have high enough malpractice insurance coverage to cover any likely scenario in a malpractice action to protect your assets. So it's important that you consider these things and talk with a consultant, talk with somebody about this when you're setting up partnership arrangements. I certainly wouldn't hire a junior doctor to be working in my office unless that junior doctor was very well covered with malpractice insurance. That's a protection for me as the senior doctor, as well as a protection for the employee and the junior doctor. Chances are the senior doctor, the doctor doing the hiring, has a lot more assets at risk than the junior doctor. The junior doctor just out of school might have $100,000 in student loans. That's not an asset, that's a liability. But you may have $100,000 in student loans. Your only asset may be that 75 Toyota that you're driving. And so there's not much there for a potential claimant to go after in terms of a lawsuit. But the hiring doctor, the doctor that hires that young doctor to work for him, may have a house, a boat, a car, an airplane, stocks, bonds, retirement plan, and some real estate there. And so that is vulnerable when the young doctor is working for the old doctor. That the assets of the senior doctor are vulnerable in a lawsuit. So if you're either one of those, the junior or the senior doctor, make sure that you insulate yourself with sufficient levels of liability insurance. Make sure you're covered very well. Beyond that, people like to get into retitling of assets. You may have your retirement plan held in another name, or you may have your real estate held in another name. And you may want to form a corporation to give you a little extra limited liability in that case. So it's very important to avoid these respondeat superior cases, that you have a clear-cut idea of who works for you and what levels of responsibility you have for the actions of other people. It is evident that employers have to supervise employees. And if you don't supervise them and make sure they're doing the right thing and they do something wrong, you are in trouble. You should have been supervising them. That's your responsibility. Probably one of the best protections here as a doctor who hires people, you're going to hire a CA and maybe two CAs and maybe an insurance clerk, a secretary. And you will have these people carrying out duties that you are to be supervising. Probably one of the best protections that we have here is an employee job description and an employee manual. That manual very clearly and very specifically delineates the duties of the employee and states the policies of the office. If an employee is found to be breaching the policies of the office, then you have a responsibility to correct that person. If you find out that your CA is not doing things according to your manual, then you have to correct them. And the bottom line here is, if they don't make corrections and improve, then you have to fire them because they're not carrying out responsibilities of your office. And when they don't carry them out, you're the person who's going to be in trouble if something goes wrong. If a CA is treating patients on her own or on his own without your intervention, you're liable. And there was a case of a CA who came into the office on a weekend and x-rayed a neighbor's child's arm and made the pronouncement that there were no fractures. The doctor didn't even know that the CA was in the office on the weekend taking an x-ray. But the CA happened to know how to turn the x-ray machine on, how to run the processor, how to take a film. And, you know, she's had no training in diagnostic radiology, but she looked at the film, said nothing broken. Turns out, later on, there was a fracture. And the lawsuit that came around, you know, eventually got to the chiropractor, saying, you were supposed to be supervising that employee. You gave that employee a key to your office and the ability to use the x-ray machine. And the doctor was able to point at the employee manual saying, you're not supposed to be here on the weekend, you're not supposed to be acting on your own authority, and you're acting outside the scope of your employment when she was doing that. So the doctor was not found liable in this case because he had a clear-cut policy. If he hadn't had a clear-cut policy about that, he could have been held liable for the situation. So it's important having a set of rules and regulations for your employees, and then firing people if they don't uphold them. Make sure you are covered this way.